Chapter 4. Battle with the Morlocks. I felt like a beast in a trap, and my concern was how to save myself from this danger. But my immediate enemy now was the darkness caused by the new moon. Finally, I understood the reason for the fear of the little upperworld people of the dark. Once, the Eloi were the aristocracy and the Morlocks their servants. But with time, their relationship had slowly changed. The Eloi had become beautiful, useless beings. They still possessed the earth, the rich beauty of its surface, and enjoyed the sunshine. On the contrary, because the Morlocks had lived underground for innumerable generations, they found the daylight intolerable. The Morlocks made the Eloi's clothes and maintained them in their habitual needs. And suddenly, the memory of the meat I had seen in the underworld came into my mind. Oh my God, it was them, the Eloi. I was horrified. I, at least, would defend myself. Without further delay, I decided to make myself arms and find a safe place where I could sleep. I wandered along the valley of the Thames, but found nothing suitable for sleeping safely. Then the Palace of Green Porcelain came back to my memory, and in the early afternoon, taking Weena like a child upon my shoulder, I went up the hills towards the southwest. It was already past sunset when I came in sight of the palace. Weena had been much delighted when I began to carry her. But after a while, she desired me to let her down. She ran along by my side, occasionally picking flowers, which she put in my pockets joyfully. Ah, wait a second. That reminds me. In changing my jacket, I found these withered flowers. As you can see, they're quite strange and unusual, aren't they? But now let's go back to the story. Weena had got tired and was visibly worried because the darkness was growing deeper. So I took her in my arms. She put hers around my neck and, closing her eyes, tightly pressed her face against my shoulder. So far, I had seen nothing of the Morlocks, but it was yet early in the night, and the darker hours before the old moon rose were still to come. We arrived at the top of a hill from which I could see a thick, wide and black forest. The Green Palace wasn't visible any longer now. I was very tired too, so I decided to stop and spend the night there before the wood. Weena was fast asleep. I carefully wrapped her in my jacket and sat down beside her to wait for the moonrise. The hill was quiet and deserted, but from the darkness of the wood there came now and then a movement of living things. Above me shone the stars, because the night was very clear. I felt a certain sense of friendly comfort in seeing that the Milky Way seemed to be still the same. That was a never-ending night, even though I dozed at times. I tried not to think of the Morlocks as well as I could. At last the dawn came, pale at first, and then growing pink and warm. I had seen no Morlocks on the hill that night, and in the confidence of the new day, it almost seemed to me that my fear had been unreasonable. I stood up and found my foot swollen and painful. So I sat down again, took off my shoes, and threw them away. I woke up Weena, and we went down into the wood. We found some fruit and had our breakfast. We soon met other Eloi, laughing and dancing in the sunlight. I had, at that time, no clear plans. My first was to find some safe place and to make myself arms of metal or stone. That necessity was immediate. In the next place, I hoped to get something to light a fire so that I could have a torch. I knew that nothing would be more efficient against these Morlocks. Then I wanted to make up a device to break open the doors of bronze under the White Sphinx. I had a feeling that if I could enter those doors and carry some light with me, I would discover the time machine and escape. As to Weena, I had decided to bring her with me to our time. When we approached the Palace of Green Porcelain at about midday, I found it deserted and falling into ruin. The door was open and broken, and we found a long gallery lit by many side windows. At first, it seemed to be a museum. The floor was thick with dust, and so was the vast collection of various objects. Further in the gallery was a huge skeleton of a brontosaurus, and a splendid collection of fossils, so my museum hypothesis was confirmed. Exploring the very silent museum, hand in hand with Weena, I found another short gallery. This appeared to be dedicated to minerals, and seeing a block of sulphur, I looked for gunpowder, but I could find none. In another hall I found big machines, all greatly corroded and many broken down, but some still fairly complete. Then I saw that the gallery ran down into a thick darkness. I hesitated, and then, as I looked round me, I saw a number of small, narrow footprints. I immediately thought of the presence of the Morlocks. Later, I noticed a long metal bar coming out of a big machine. I climbed it, and, seizing this bar in my hands, I put all my weight upon it and started to push down. It broke after a few seconds. It was more than sufficient for any Morlock head I might encounter. Afterwards, going up a broad staircase, we came to what once was probably a hall for chemistry. It was well preserved, and I started to look around excitedly. And at last, in one of the airtight cases, I found a box of matches. I tried one. It lit immediately. They were perfectly good. I turned to Weena. "Dance," I cried to her in her language. Now I had another weapon against the horrible creatures. Soon after, in a hermetically sealed jar, I found some camphor. I remembered that it was inflammable and burned with a good bright flame, so I put it in my pocket. I found no means of breaking down the bronze doors. However, I left that gallery feeling really happy. As the evening approached, my interest became less. I went through gallery after gallery. They were dusty and silent, and the exhibits were often severely damaged. Then we came to a little open court within the palace. It had three fruit trees, so we rested and refreshed ourselves. Towards sunset, I began to consider our position. Night was coming near, and I hadn't found a safe hiding place yet. But that troubled me very little now. In my possession, I had a thing that was the best of all defences against the Morlocks. I had matches. I had the camphor in my pocket too, and a long and heavy bar to fight with. It seemed to me that the best thing would be to pass the night in the open, protected by a fire. We came out of the palace while the sun was still in part above the horizon. I was determined to reach the White Sphinx early the next morning, and went towards the woods that had stopped me on the previous journey. My plan was to go as far as possible that night, and then, building a fire, to sleep in the protection of its light. So, as we went along, I gathered sticks and dried grass. It was full night before we reached the wood. Weena wished to stop, fearing the darkness before us, but I wanted to go onward in spite of the fact that I had been without sleep for a night and 2 days. While we hesitated, among the black bushes behind us, I saw three figures. Immediately it came into my head to light the sticks and the dried grass I had collected. The red tongues of fire were a new and strange thing to Weena. She wanted to run to it and play with it. She was going to throw herself into it, but I stopped her. After a while, the light of my fire lit a path. Soon I ran into the wood, carrying Weena on my left arm and holding my bar in my right hand. For some time, I could only hear the cracking sticks under my feet, the rustle of the light wind above, and my own breathing and the beating of my heart in my ears. Suddenly, I heard footsteps around me and I quickened my pace. Then, I heard the same strange voices I had heard in the underworld. There were evidently several of the Morlocks all around me. Indeed, soon after, I felt a pull at my coat, then something pulled my arm. Weena started to tremble violently and became rigid. It was time for a match, but to get one, I had to put her down. I did so, and as I put my hand in my pocket, a struggle began in the darkness around my knees. Weena was perfectly silent, and the Morlocks let out those unusual, horrible sounds. Soft little hands, too, were touching my coat and my back, even my neck. Then I lit the match, held it up, and saw the white backs of the Morlocks in flight among the trees. Their horrible sounds grew louder. Then I looked at Weena. She was lying motionless with her face to the ground. She seemed scarcely to breathe. The match went out. I lit a piece of camphor and threw it to the ground. This drove the Morlocks back. I knelt down and lifted her. She seemed to have fainted. I put her carefully upon my shoulder and stood up to continue on my way. But then there came a terrible realization. In moving with my matches and Weena, I had turned around several times and now I had lost my way. I decided to build a fire and encamp where we were. I put Weena, still motionless, down on the grass and began collecting sticks and leaves. Here and there, out of the darkness around me, the Morlock's red eyes shone like burning coals. Now, the smoke of the fire was nearly suffocating. Moreover, a strong vapour of camphor was in the air. And I was making every effort to keep my eyes open. Suddenly, I felt soft hands touching me. It was the Morlocks. I quickly looked for the matchbox in my pocket, and it had gone. In a moment I knew what had happened. I had slept, and my fire had gone out. The forest was full of the smell of burning wood. Then they attacked me. I was caught by the neck, by the hair, by the arms, and I was pulled down. It was horrible in the darkness to feel all those soft creatures upon me. I felt as if I was in a monstrous spider's web. Now, little sharp teeth were biting at my neck. I rolled over, and in so doing, my hand touched something cold and metallic. It was my iron bar. It gave me strength. I got up, shaking the human rats from me, and holding the bar short, I hit at them blindly and wildly around me. I could hear screams of pain, flesh beaten and bones broken under my blows, and for a moment I was free. I knew that both I and Weena were lost, but I decided to make the Morlocks pay for their meat. I stood with my back to a tree, holding the iron bar tightly before me. The whole wood was full of their cries. A minute passed, and none of them came near. I stood gazing at the blackness, but nothing was happening. What was going on? Then a strange thing took place. The darkness seemed to grow luminous. Very dimly, I began to see the Morlocks around me. Three of them lay slaughtered at my feet. The others, much to my surprise, were running away through the wood in front, and their backs seemed no longer white, but reddish. Looking back, I saw the flames of the burning forest. The first fire that I had lit was following me. I looked for Weena, but she was gone. The coming fire left little time for reflection. With my iron bar still in my hand, I followed in the Morlock's path. After a while, the flames were moving forward so rapidly on my right that I had to run to the left immediately. But at last, I came to a small open space. And now, I was going to see the most strange and terrible thing of all the events I saw in that future age. The open space was as bright as day with the reflection of the fire. On the hills around were about 30 or 40 Morlocks, blinded by the light and nearly suffocated by the smoke and heat. They were running backwards and forwards against each other in their panic. At first, I did not realize their blindness and struck furiously at them with my bar as they approached me, killing one and wounding several more. But then I realized that they were absolutely impotent in that blinding light, and I struck no more of them. I walked about the hill among them and avoided them, looking for some trace of Weena. But Weena was gone. At last, I sat down on the summit of the hill and watched this strange, incredible company of blind human beings moving backwards and forwards and making strange noises to each other as the red light of the fire beat on them. For the most part of that night, I was persuaded it was a nightmare. I bit myself and screamed in a strong desire to awake. I beat the ground with my hands and got up and sat down again and wandered here and there and again sat down. Then I started to rub my eyes and call on God to let me awake. But at last came the white light of the day. I searched again for traces of Weena, but there were none. It was clear that they had left her poor little body in the forest. I can't describe how relieved I was to think that she had escaped the awful fate to which she seemed destined. As I thought of that, I was almost moved to begin a massacre of the helpless Morlocks around me, but I controlled myself. As I have said, the hill was a kind of island in the forest. From its summit, I could now see the Palace of Green Porcelain through the smoke, and from that, I could find the path to the White Sphinx. And so, I walked with a limp towards the hiding place of the time machine. I walked slowly, because I was almost exhausted, and I felt miserable at the horrible death of little Weena. Now, in this old familiar room, it is more like the sorrow of a dream than an actual loss. But that morning, it left me absolutely lonely again. I began to think of this house of mine, of this fireplace, of some of you, and I was seized by a painful desire to come back. But as I walked over the smoking ashes under the bright morning sky, I made a discovery. In my trouser pocket, I found that I still had some matches. Probably the box had broken before it was lost.